All right. Thanks, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Conversations with Dr. Cowan and Friends. Interesting, Mark. The last interview I did was with Rodney, who's also going to be one of the doctors working with me. And I said I didn't know which number podcast this was. And he said, oh, it's the 67th. How did you know? Like, I have no idea, but apparently he had counted. Today's agenda is very simple. We had this idea, mostly my son Asher, to, you know, like, Dad, you gotta put these ideas into action someday. You've been telling me for 30 years, you know. So anyways, I had my own practice and then I stopped. And so he really wanted us to do something. So I agreed eventually. It was a good idea, so it wasn't hard. So then we hired a guy who I had worked with, Adam, for a while. And it went well enough that he got full. And so we had to hire somebody else. So we put out a call. And we got about 65 applicants, which shocked me. I did not expect that. But anyways, that's what happened. And one of them, we chose three doctors to work with this clinic initiative. Rodney, who was the last one, and then Pam, who's going to be the next interview. And today is with Mark from New Zealand. And so I was thinking, why Mark? You know, it's an interesting question. And all I can say is really immediately there was a vibe about you that this guy would be really good for these people. I don't know what it was about you, or you didn't even, wasn't anything you said. It really was a feeling. I don't know what it is really. And now I'm even more sure of that. And so now let's put a little bit of a biography. And so tell us like who you are a little, you know, not your lifestyle and why you would want to work with a thing called a new biology clinic. Like most doctors would say, what are you kidding me? Or what's wrong with the old biology? And the only thing else I'm going to say about that is I'm not ready to go public with this, but I recently read a paper by our good friend Gerald Pollack, who I think you know.
Yes.
On why we breathe. And it turns out it's not quite like so we can get oxygen, but I'm going to leave it at that. That's, of course, what we all think. But there's some interesting counter arguments to that, which we'll go into someday. Anyways, there's Mark. Tell us a little bit who you are and why you're wanting to be part of this, and welcome.
Thanks, Tom. Well, you know, it's funny you say that, that you got a vibe, because it was, I almost didn't put in an application because, you know, you said that it had, that you had 65 people apply, which was surprising to you. It wasn't surprising to me. Like I was expecting that, you know, that sort of amount of fear, and I almost didn't put in an application because I thought, oh, you know, why would I be considered? Even though, like, I saw it come through, and I was like, oh, man, that's like my dream job. And so and I'd been following your work since 2006, and I guess probably a little bit like Rodney, you know, I've listened to all your podcasts, and so the reason why I've sort of ended up here is I sort of lost faith in my profession as a general practitioner. I've been a family doctor for almost 20 years, and so I'd seen a lot of stuff, and then the whole COVID thing came along, and
You were in you're talking New Zealand. That's where you're from.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. I was graduated from medical school in 2002, and that was from Auckland University there. And yeah, and then I did a couple of years as a house surgeon, and then I sort of lost my way a little bit because I had wanted to go in and initially be a plastic surgeon, but I looked at the lifestyle that those guys were having, and there was a lot of long hours, and they looked not happy. And so even though the work was really appealing, I was like, I want to have a family, and so that didn't really seem that conducive to a fairly crucial stage of, a relationship and a marriage. And so I got a bit lost after that, and I sort of floated around doing emergency department locums, and so that was in Australia and all around New Zealand. And then I got married.
It's interesting. Let me just stop you for a minute, because we had, I think, two other plastic surgeons.
Right.
And it was interesting because they when I asked them why they went into plastic surgery, they said it's the only area of medicine that I could see where we actually did some good for people. Because it is true, if you have somebody with like facial deformity or something and you can fix it, it actually makes a huge difference in their life.
Yeah. I think that was the thing that appealed to me too.
It has nothing to do with theories about mitochondria or germs, or it's like mechanics almost.
Yeah. I totally relate to that.
Yeah.
And on reflection, when you say that, I wonder if that was a little bit why I got a bit lost, because then I wasn't enjoying doing medicine. And so I thought that maybe the problem was the patients.
Blame the patient. That's how we learned it. If you don't know what the problem is, just blame it. Guy, patient's an idiot, What do you expect?
I know. And that's really kind of the vibe that was going on in the hospital. So I guess I just bought into that. And so that's why I sort of gravitated to emergency department medicine, because it was like the briefest interactions you could have with patients.
Yeah.
And so my father was a GP though. And so I was bouncing around doing these locums, and he said, I want to go to China for 4 weeks. Can you come and look after my family practice? And I was like, I don't know how to be a GP. I can't be a GP. And he's like, no, there's nothing to it. No, you'll be fine. And so he sort of convinced me, because he wasn't able to find anybody to do it. And so I sort of did it a bit out of obligation. But the amazing thing was that I realized when I started doing that I had it completely backwards, that the problem wasn't the patients. The problem was the kind of medicine and the culture that was going on in the hospital. And so
was there any specific incident that got you to see that, or was it just the accumulation of stuff?
Well, it was, I think it sort of happened in the first week or two, because I would see somebody and then they would come back and I would see them again, and then there'd be a bit more of the story. And so and that was the bit that suddenly became where the life was, where I was, it became interesting then. And so it happened fairly quickly, but it wasn't really one particular incident. And so then I was like, oh, okay, well, this is good. This is what I want to do. And so I went ahead and got onto the training scheme to become a specialist generalist. That's how they sort of term it in New Zealand, become a specialist general practitioner. And so, I think I was the youngest person at that stage to do general practice certainly in my cohort that was kind of going through, because I'd sort of gone straight through from school, and I took a break to do some athletics and some bobsleigh during my medical training. But then I was very young for a GP to go in, and so and then I sort of went through that process, and then I ended up a fellow of the college here, and then I started to educate GPs in the last couple of years. And so then it was, and that was all going well. Like, it was a lot of pressure to try and get everything into a 15-minute appointment, because that's how we would run, just 15-minute appointments back to back. And
was that like a requirement of the situation, or was that your own practice?
Well, it was just the way everybody did it. And in fact, when I started, it was 10 minutes. And so, which is even worse. So, yeah, my father had always done, he'd always done 10-minute appointments. And because I was working in his practice, I just sort of slotted into that. But it quickly became apparent that I was the only one in the training scheme that was doing 10-minute appointments. Everyone else was doing 15. And Dad always tells me that, when he was doing the same thing, it was even less. Like, the guy he used to work for, he didn't even have a chair in his office. Like, people weren't allowed to sit down.
Yeah.
And so it was, and they would just fly through, and he would see 120 patients a day.
Wow.
And so, yeah. And
it's like in the ER. And I remember reading a statistic that the average time that a family doctor gives their patient to talk before they interrupt them is 37 seconds.
Yeah.
And when I was an ER doctor, I had it down to about 13. That was it. You could say your arm and then you get in an x-ray. That's it. I'm done.
Yeah, it sounds like we're pretty similar in that regard. So
yeah,
there was this getting back to you, is that how everybody did it? Why didn't I potentially do it differently? It just seemed like there wasn't room in the model for longer. I mean, patients could book a double appointment, but even if you encouraged it, it seemed like the patients who didn't need a double appointment would book one, and those that really did need a double appointment would never book a double appointment. And so it was all just sort of feeding back to, short, sharp, things. So then the last couple of years I was educating GPs, like helping them to become general practitioners. And I'd always had a sort of a natural medicine bent. People came to see me because I was prepared to look outside the conventional medical model for solutions if they haven't been able to find any. And also that there was, developed a reputation for somebody who could give a balanced viewpoint around vaccination, although we never vaccinated our children. And so it was more that I was able to talk to them about their concerns and things. I think probably the next thing was that then the COVID thing came along, and in New Zealand we got mandated to get vaccinated, otherwise we couldn't continue to work. And I had pretty early on decided that that was not going to be something I was going to be doing. And so the
imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then, after that, there was a.
Did you have to quit?
I got stood down because I wasn't able to continue to work, and so I was a owner of the practice at that point, and I'd owned my dad's practice in Christchurch, and then when my daughter was about 5 or so, we decided that, well, as she was going to start making, you know, more longer term friends, if we were ever going to move anywhere, then now would be the time. And so then we ended up moving to Wanaka. And so, and in the last couple of years, there I had become a practice owner. So I got stood down from my own practice. So there was four owners there because I wasn't really able to work. And so I tried to engage my colleagues in like some, you know, robust discussion about why I saw serious problems with what was going on in the world. And they really weren't that interested. And so it became more and more apparent that we were on different paths. And so, and then also I got interviewed by the local newspaper as to why I'd left the job. And I told them what I thought. And so that got published to the local population, which caused a bit of a furore. And so there was the medical council got involved and the Minister of Health got involved. And so,
wow. And this was early 2020.
Yeah, this was, it's actually late. It's actually late 2021 by that stage. So we got mandated. So the vaccinations in early 2021, our medical council said that they expected us all to get vaccinated, and also that it was not appropriate for anyone to talk about any sort of anti-vaccination stuff in practice. And yeah. And that got me really up in arms because, A, you know, where do you get off telling me what to put in my body? And secondly, you know, you're interfering with my ability to give patients a balanced viewpoint. And so, and you guys are not even doctors. So it's like, where do you get off doing that? And it was at that point that really kicked me into finding out really what the deal was with this. And I had, I'd struggled a bit with your no virus thing until that point. And because it was around about the same sort of time. I was like, I've really got to look into this properly. And so that triggered that. And then of course I found out that, as you well know, there's nothing there in terms of viruses of any substance. So I didn't go as far as saying there was no virus in terms of the local newspaper, because obviously they're not under kind of media control like a lot of our mainstream media is in New Zealand. And so then it sort of got blown open, and then they had the biggest response ever, I think, on their Facebook page. And so, and then the Ministry of Health wrote a response to my article, and then the Sun wanted me to write a counter response. And so, as you can imagine, my partners at the medical center, they weren't that really happy about this kind of publicity. It wasn't really their thing. And so we ended up, I ended up selling out of the practice at that point, because it was like and I had become totally disillusioned, not only with the way medicine was handling the COVID situation, but I had then gone, well, if there's a problem with this, like what else is there a problem with? And so, and then to find out that just everything was so unreliable and so biased and pushed towards one type of strategy, which is basically, you know, a group of symptoms equals one diagnosis, and you here take this pharmaceutical which will suppress your symptoms, and if you're lucky you might get better, otherwise it's probably you just take that for the rest of your life. And that was that didn't sit well with me. And so
it's amazing about that, and I mean in some ways we've all been through it, but you start to wonder, like, why didn't I see this 10 years ago?
Yeah, that's right. It was almost like that was I don't want to look at that because I don't want to look at it. Like, I've got these questions that it's not sitting right. But if I look into that, what if that means that it's a problem? And then what's that going to mean for me? And so, you know, in terms of what I'll do for my career, or how I'll look to my colleagues, and so you just kind of, I think subconsciously you just kind of go, I'll deal with that some other time.
Yeah.
And so, so for me, the COVID debacle was a real blessing, because it made me go, well, I've got to answer this question around the vaccine, the COVID vaccine. And then I was like, well, while I'm here, I may as well try and answer all these other questions I've had as well. And so I found myself, well, I lost myself and found myself. I lost a lot of my sense of self-worth, because I'd realized so much of that was tied up in my medical degree and the I guess the prestige or the status that gave me. But in that process, that's not really what I should be basing my self-worth on. And so And what I did.
So when you say you found yourself, what does that mean? What can you say more about that?
Yeah, sure. If I had attached everything into this kind of being a doctor, it was the thing that, you know, took my first priority. It was kind of like, you know, if I was late home from work, well, that was justified, because, you know, that was because it was important, you know, and patients needed me and that sort of stuff. And you know, if it was, you know, as the provider of the family, you know, it was the I provided, you know, because I was, and so to when you lose that, then when I lost that, so I essentially lost that status. Well, I willingly gave it up, and because I was like, it's not worth anything. But then that left me with, oh, well, now what excuse have I got for being late? Or what is provision for my family look like? And it made me realize, like you said before, that, you know, why didn't I see this sooner? That it's such a shallow thing to have your self-worth tied up in. And then to find that, you know, being provider for the family is not just about being, you know, providing the income, and being on time is about respecting the people that are important in your life. That was a difficult shift for me to make. And so I look back on that now and go, that's a really good thing to find, because I think my self-worth is now rooted more in things that are of true value, rather than some you know, degree, I guess, that's hanging on the wall. But it was a painful process to go through, so I wouldn't want to do it again, but I'm glad it happened.
So and along the way, did you start looking into, okay, so what do I do if somebody comes with such and such, or, you know, how can I help people, or what makes people sick, or whatever?
And I had been listening to your talking about, you know, about it being the story for patients, and you know, that was really where the key was to unlocking stuff for their health. And so there were still people who'd kind of sought me out, because they were like, you know, could you see me about this thing? I've lost faith in the medical system. I can't really trust what they say anymore, you know. And, you know, and so I started to see people, and but because I had lots of time now, like there wasn't a restriction on, ever since I'd started seeing patients, there was always like this time restriction. You had to get through it. And so when I didn't have that anymore, and it really brought to life what you had been talking about, and so then when I sort of started to sort of formalize or you know, having got a few ducks in a row and what I thought health was really about, I started to see patients again, and I decided I was always going to see them for an hour to start with. And so, and then that was where a lot of the, I remember you talking about this, like you hear the story, they get to tell their whole story, and then you reflect it back to them. And then they have this moment where they hear what their life has been like up to this point. And then it's like they move into this powerful position of looking over what their situation is, and then they can make connections that they didn't sort of previously make, or that the person they were trying to convey the story, you know, wouldn't make. And so, and they would have this gratefulness at the end of it that they'd been able to get their story out. And so, and that, if anything, was the most powerful thing in them changing their health situation.
Yeah. I've said that for years. The best thing I ever did was learn how to hear people's story and then reflect it back. And that was the key to everything, because then they said, now I know what to do, or now I have an idea or something. And then you give them some possibilities for how to interface with that story in a, like, you know, in a productive way. Like, well, you think about eating better or moving more or moving differently or something like that. And then you start building a repertoire of interventions.
Yeah.
And that's when it gets really interesting and fun.
Yeah.
So it sounds like that's kind of where you're at now.
Yeah, that's right. And so when your clinic came up, I was like, wow, that's where it's happening. That the very thing that I want to create is happening. And so it was the one thing that it was a little bit which was difficult, was that, you know, I'm here in Wanaka in New Zealand, and as far as I know, I was the only person that was doing this kind of approach, you know, that was, it was, and so you feel quite isolated. And so one of the really big appeals was getting and being together with other like-minded people doing the same stuff. And so when you've got two people collaborating together, it's, you get a greater thing than the sum of the parts. And so that was immediately something that was very appealing, because then you can kind of go, you know, if I'm a bit stuck on this, then, you know, for this patient, then we can find the solution, something I can bounce off. Whereas I didn't have that. So,
yeah. I mean, that's what every single person I've talked to said. The main reason I want to do this is the collaboration. And, you know, we're going to have, I think, weekly or something like that. You know, there's now five of us. And, you know, and so most of my career was just me. And I didn't really find very many people to talk to because one thing or another. But it's like, so I heard this story about this guy with a blood pressure of 200/120, and here's his story. And, oh, I had similar, and I, you know, told him to walk barefoot and use this wand and drink this water, and now it's fine. And, you know, like, that's an easy one, but you wouldn't necessarily have thought of those things. And so it's really an opportunity to learn and you know, collaborate. That's why everybody wants to do it.
Yeah. Well, I totally relate.
Because the learning curve by yourself is really slow. The learning curve with five people asking the same questions, getting the same stories, it's much better. So
yeah, it's exciting.
And you know, the interesting thing is, the only thing that has to happen, and the only thing that, you know, in a way I was looking for, is somebody who says, yeah, I want to learn it. I want to learn what works and how life works as best I can. Once you do that, the rest of it just kind of happens. It's that resistance. The resistance is why people don't learn. Yeah. That's not what I was taught. That's not what my grandfather did, you know, or whatever. Then you're stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's for me, that was one of the blessings of going through this COVID thing, because I got to the point where I was like, I probably have to just chuck all of the stuff out. Everything that I have based everything on, I probably have to chuck all of it out. and then everything will just smash on the floor, and then I can just pick up the bits that I still think are any good.
Yeah.
And so that's and it's made me have this realization of, gosh, I'd become so closed-minded and over the years. And so it's been a really good
thing. And you know, it's interesting, because a doctor friend of mine, after we'd talked viruses for months, he said to me something very interesting, which I totally agree with, because it's actually not a difficult scientific problem, right? It's very simple. He said, there's nothing about this that's science. It's an emotional, psychological problem.
Yeah.
That's why people believe that in viruses or a lot of these things. It has nothing to do with thinking or, you know, that we pretend it does, but it actually doesn't.
Yeah.
Once you get into, I'm not going to fall apart if I realize there's this, I was wrong.
Yeah.
Like, it may sting for a while. I may have to, you know, I don't know, whatever, but I'm okay. You know, I just go on.
Yeah. There's also another aspect too, as well. I think viruses is a great way to absolve yourself of responsibility, like to push the responsibility off onto something else. And so, there's this neat thing that happens, I observe with people though, is that you lose your power. And so if you give away your responsibility, you lose your power. And I think that's a trade that people don't realize they make. And then in helping people to understand, you know, the whole no virus thing, then you can see them start to get their power back. And that's a really neat thing, because they go, oh no, I'm going to have to take responsibility for the fact of, you know, that I get sick, rather than be able to blame it on something else. And so then they move into this more powerful place. And then I think that's really neat.
Yeah. Yeah. In the beginning, it's, what are you telling me? It's my fault.
Yeah.
And then, you know, later it's, thank God it's my fault in a way, because now I can do something.
Yeah,
I don't actually have to eat all that junk food all the time. And maybe that's why. And so I can actually do something, and it's not so hard. In fact, I like this other food better anyways. And then it's a whole new ball game.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to tell our people or anything?
Sure. Like my thing has been, I've had a lot of phases have come through where I've been my practice over the years. And I think that's mostly because it's mums that seem to be the most concerned about vaccinations. And so there was that attraction into their, you know, to come see me, because they're the ones that are concerned. And they're often the ones that are concerned more about how to bring up children that are healthy as well. And so that's really been, for me, that's been a real delight and a real rewarding part of my practice in the past 20 years. And so that's the sort of thing that I like to do. And so there's and that I'm really looking forward to, you know, being able to work with people.
And you have some experience with children, I hear, right? Some of your own.
Yeah. I've got five kids. And so it was, I just had a, I just had a funny interaction with Adam, actually, because I just discovered that he's got 12 homeschooled kids.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah. And then I said to him that he'd managed to double my homeschool kids and raise me two. And I was like, that's never been done before. I'm always the guy who's like, wow, you've got five kids. And so,
yeah. Okay, Mark. Well, thanks for joining me. I'm thrilled to have you on board. And I think it's a great way to introduce you to our friends and people. And we will be in touch and set up the meetings. And we're all in this together now.
Yeah, great. I can't wait.
Okay, Mark. Thanks for Tom. Joining me.
Yeah, cool. Cheers.
Okay. Bye-bye.